Thank you, George, for introduction. I'm Hiro Nakamura from Max Planck Institute in Stuttgart, and I'm a second experimentalist today. And today, first of all, I would like to thank the organizers for giving me this nice opportunity to talk in this program. So I'm going to talk about basically two things. One is strontium titanate Rashomon effect, and another one is the topological crystalline insulator candidate with this weird composition. And both are, of course, related to spin orbit coupling, and both are oxides. And first topic is more kind of related to how we can drive the otherwise very conventional material into a spin orbit coupled system by using an electric field. And the other one is something which intrinsically have interesting properties from the beginning. Okay, here are my collaborators, and I especially would like to thank Professor Tsuyoshi Kimura in Osaka, who was very supportive and encouraging during my time there. And Professor Koga contributed a lot in discussing about the Rashomon effect in STO. And some of the quantum oscillation data we took in collaboration with Harold Swan's group in Stanford, and also Ali Bangura, who is my colleague now in Stuttgart. And for strontium 3 PBO film, the key player was Deva Samal, who is a postdoc in our group. And also, I would like to thank Hide Takagi, of course, for basically giving me an opportunity to work in a new country, which is Germany. Okay, so let me begin with this very simple slide on spin splitting phenomena in solids. So when we look at the band structure in solids, basically, we see a double degeneracy coming from the spin degrees of freedom, and this is, of course, coming from two symmetry operations, which is time reversal and space inversion. And when space inversion symmetry is broken, the system is allowed to have this kind of spin splitting, where at a finite k, you see the splitting between up and down spin states, and yes, like shown in this figure. So practically, there's two ways to induce this kind of splitting. One is to bring a material which already has a broken inversion symmetry. And other way is to apply electric field to otherwise symmetric crystals. When you look into closely into such kind of a spin-splitted material, what you see is this kind of effective magnetic field attached to each of the electrons. And since this effective field is actually related to the dependent on the momentum of each of those electrons, people normally visualize in this momentum space. And when doing so, we find this vertical structure as you go around this two of the Fermi circles of the spin split bands. And this is the basic situation of what we call the Rashomon effect, and the magnitude of the effect can be evaluated by measuring the spin splitting of those bands. And typically it's around 1 mV for conventional semiconductors. Which by equating to h bar omega, where omega is a Larmor frequency, we can roughly estimate the magnetic field strength, which is around 8.6 tesla. So the point I wanted to make here is that even though this spin splitting might seem quite small, the actual field acting on the electron is quite significant. Okay, so now I would like to mention this paper by Datta and Das, where they claim that this Rushville interaction can be utilized to make a new type of logic device, which is called a spin transistor. So basically, the difference between the normal transistor is that they utilize the rotation of spin coming from the Rushville effect to make the device off and on. And I mention this paper because, you know, the original paper by Rushville was kind of proposed some 50 or 60 years ago, and nobody paid much attention for a long time. But after this paper appeared, it literally got very popular, and many people started to look into this phenomena. And I think what's interesting about this proposal is that this told us that in principle, you don't have to always look into the semiconducting system to make a logic device. Even a metal can be an interesting candidate, because what you have to do is just rotate the spin. So this kind of triggered intensive research on the Rushville material. And here's a very limited list. And many of them entered into this list quite recently. I just would like to mention, probably the tiniest one observed so far is in silicon. And the largest one is probably those found in a bismuth thorium iodide. But actually, many of the material in this list, including these two, have a property which I just described, which is intimately related to the fact that this spin splitting is proportional to momentum. So we are interested in possibly finding something more exotic. And we came to know about one quite appealing candidate, which is called K-cubic Rushville. Yes.
Maybe a naive question. So yeah. You showed in the previous slide that these Rushville couplings are differ by what was it, 4 or 5 orders of magnitude
right,
of material.
Yes. Yeah.
Is there a simple reason for that? Because you would think that actually it all depends on a potential gradient. And the potential gradient to the vacuum will always be kind of similar for all materials, roughly.
Okay, so the subtle point is that the atomic spin orbit coupling also comes into this coefficient. So, you know, for silicon, it's very tiny. So as you go down to the periodic table, it can be, you know, orders of magnitude different. So that's the reason behind it. So we came to know about this interesting candidate, which has this form of Hamiltonian. And you notice that in this off-diagonal term between up and down spins, there's a K-cube term appearing. And because of this form, the spin texture you obtain is quite different. So as you go around 120 degrees in the Fermi circle, the spin rotates already one turn. And in total, it rotates three times as much as compared to the K-linear Rushville effect. So this was actually theoretically proposed some time ago. And the model was actually the gallium arsenide system, a whole band. And let me explain a little bit about how this cubic Rushville term arises. And so if you look at the whole band of gallium arsenide, it's composed consisting of this 4-4 degenerate band, described by a total angular momentum of 3/2 states. And when you apply electric field to this manifold, this kind of Rushville term is proposed to arise, connecting the neighboring J's states. And actually, the trick here is to confine this electron gas to the quantum well. Then you split these two states. And even in that case, actually, for J 1/2 state pair, you see a linear Rushville coupling. So it shows a linear Rushville. But this splitting is a problem for J 3/2 pair because it doesn't have a direct off-diagonal element. And this inevitably gives rise to this higher order effect. And in the end, it shows a K-cubic Rushville. So this was the basic setup for gallium arsenide.
Sir, can I ask
yes.
The previous slide?
Yes.
It looks like the quantum well is asymmetric. Is that important?
Okay. No. So this splitting can be either realized in a symmetric or asymmetric. But asymmetric component is always important for giving this Rashba term. So there's two stories, splitting and this Rashba term, which is caused by the asymmetry. So, but there was a subtle problem about using a Gallium-arsenide system. So people know from a long time ago that this crystal structure itself has a broken inversion symmetry. And people know that actually K cubic term arises due to this rush bulk broken inversion. And actually the tricky part is that when it's confined in a quantum well, the precise value is not very well known up to now for this Dresselhaus effect. So it's actually good to have another candidate. And so here is where the oxides comes in. So if you look at the band structure of gallium arsenide and just flip it upside down, this mimics the T2G electron gas of oxides. So this is nice. And what we have to do is to just split these two states, possibly by making a confinement or quantum well. Okay, so this is the actual material we looked into, which is strontium titanate, a very conventional oxide system. And the reason for this is, of course, strontium titanate has a bulk inversion symmetry, so we don't have to worry actually about the Dresselhaus effect superimposing on the Rashba effect. And the conduction band minimum is composed of fourfold three half states. And to make an inversion asymmetric potential, what we created is this kind of device. We put gate insulator by polymer and then put the gate metal on top. And actually, this gate metal serves as a tool to induce not only the electron gas, but also to make an inversion broken potential well. So here we can see that by applying quite a large voltage, we can drive the system from insulator to metal, spanning quite a large order of magnitude in resistance. And I would like to mention that, for example, compared to the LAO-STO 2-deck, our carrier density is about an order of magnitude lower, with moderately high mobilities. Okay, so now we have to detect the Rashba effect. And there's basically two ways. One is to resolve the dispersion versus energy and momentum. And this was very successful, not only for Rashba, but for topological insulator business. But we cannot apply directly because our 2-deck is buried inside the surface. So what we did is slightly different, trying to directly kind of monitor this spin appearing to electrons. So this is still a bit tricky business because the situation in Rashba system is such that if you add up all of these moments, it equals to zero because of many different momentum involved. So actually, we need a special technique for this, which is called anti-localization measurement. So let me spend two slides on this issue. So the basic thing behind is that at low enough temperature, electron waves behave like a monochromatic wave, like laser, reaching something like 1 microns. And this makes the interference pattern as they scatter off the impurities. And for example, to have an interference, we need to have at least two paths. And these paths are, for example, these blue lines and counterclockwise pink lines. And there's, of course, so many possible paths that we can think in the system. So actually, we can view this system as a combination of many interfering rings, And when we apply magnetic field perpendicular to these rings, quite significant thing will occur. First is this oscillation, whose frequency gets higher once the ring gets larger. And another very prominent feature is that if you look at the zero magnetic field, these phases are always maximum or minimum. And this is where actually the spin plays an important role. So actually, the situation where the conductance has a maxima is when the spin actually rotates around this Rushworth field. And when it returns, it's totally randomized. And in this situation, this conductance has a maximum. So if you finally add up all of those contributions, you get something like this. And at the zero field, you see this peak, which was actually coming from this relatively large ring. And the reason for this maximum was, of course, the rotation of spin. So this way, you can actually probe if the system has a finite effective field, which rotates the spin. So this is the result we get in our electron gas. So first of all, at around zero field, we always see this conductance peak. And this is actually showing that our system has a finite spin rotation. And spin rotation length is roughly of the order of 100, sub-100 nanometers. So this is a good thing, but actually what we wanted to pick up, it was the kind of unusual spin texture, which is possibly happening in our 2-deck. So to analyze our anti-localization signal further, we actually relied on this quite old paper coming from Russian scientists, which where they kind of included directly in the Hamiltonian this Rushworth field. And what they actually did was simulated this localization signal, assuming two different spin textures. One is a conventional linear type, and other one is those involving cubic term. And actually, the reason why they included this cubic term at this period was that they assumed a Dresselhaus term. But actually, we know that in our system, there's no bulk inversion breaking. So we just kind of borrowed this theory to analyze our cubic Rushworth term. And so here is the result of applying those theory. So this blue dot is showing experimental data. And these two lines are showing the best simulation fit. And what we assumed is that our system is either purely linear Rushworth system or purely cubic Rushworth system. Then what we found is that only by applying this pure cubic condition, we were able to kind of reproduce our data. So by this, we found that actually our system 2-deck has a K-cubic component, first of all, and probably it's related to the J3 half states of the electron gas.
So what are these parameters now?
So the fitting parameters are this B field, but this is not directly related to the field.
Well, what is the difference? I mean, just the
So the difference is that how this parameter enter into the real rigorous equation. So these are two separate terms, actually.
So there's more than one parameter.
There's more than one parameter. There's actually two these parameters, and also the phase coherence length parameters. And so there's in total three. And what we did was, out of these three parameters, use the phase coherence and either of those.
How much is the cubic term?
So actually, this fully. So in a spin splitting energy scale, it's about 1.3 millielectron volt to 0.5. 0.3 to 0.5 millielectron volt. Yes.
Can you also do Shubnikov-Dehaas oscillations to see the spin splitting between current disruptors?
Yeah, that's a very interesting point. I'll show you later, but it's still ongoing, actually.
You know, it looks like the data is asymmetric with respect to positive and negative P, or maybe it's looking from the wrong angle.
I would say, as an experimenter, this is perfectly symmetric.
It looks like it's kind of double minima. Yeah.
This I would call a noise.
Okay.
So this was kind of a good, interesting finding. And actually, I want to show a little intuitive picture of why we were possible to kind of distinguish those two. And since the localization physics is always considering these closed loops, we consider the easiest one, which is a triangle here. And by doing this, we see that for linear Rashba effect, the effective field is like this, dependent on the momentum. So as the electron waves goes through, it experiences three different components of the effective field. Whereas in the cubic Rashba system, actually it's pointing in the uniaxis direction. So actually this different spin texture as the electron travels in the nanoscale is the reason behind the difference between these two cubic varieties, two Rashba varieties. Okay, so I would like to mention a very recent data also coming from the conventional semiconductor system. So actually they used the germanium, and this actually has a bulk inversion symmetry. So unlike a gallium arsenide, it doesn't have a problem of a Dressel-Hausz term. And they actually used exactly the same theory we used in our system. And succeeded in reproducing the data using the k-cubic term. And actually, this makes sense because in germanium, you can split these J3 half states by confining, and they are populating only this topmost heavy hole band, which should have a J3 half states. So I guess this is showing that this simple technique of analyzing the localization effect is quite effective in resolving the spin texture of the film surface, as long as there is a proper theory. As far as I know, what I know is only this linear case and the cubic case. Okay, so I'll move on to more or less a loose end of my project on this STO business. So one question is that what exactly the structure of our 2-deck is like. And there's kind of a bunch of papers showing the reconstruction of this electron gas under the electric field in STO. But people, I think, more or less have a consensus already on this high electric field regime, where XY band is pulled all the way off from this manifold because of large electric field. What we are not sure is actually, since our system is very at low carrier density regime, we wanted to also clarify our system. And of course, the direct way is to use the Shubnikov-Dehaas oscillation. So these are examples of the very low temperature measurement. And what we saw is at the higher field region, we saw an oscillation coming from the Shubnikov-Dehaas effect. And by actually plotting this, extracting the carrier density out of this the Haas oscillation, we get this kind of dependence as a function of the electric field. And we also show the Hall effect measurement carrier density. So basically, we assume that this Hall effect captures all the carrier density in our system, but Chevrenko de Haas is measuring a specific one coming from each of the Fermi circles. So we see that there's large discrepancy, so which means that some large number of carriers kind of hiding, it's still escaping the quantum oscillations. And recently, in a little bit larger carrier density regime, we managed to get quite stronger oscillation. And by Fourier transforming this oscillation, we found that there's actually a couple of peaks appearing, which most likely is coming from the subband degrees of freedom. But actually, the problem we still face is that, so this is actually the temperature dependence, how the oscillation strength diminishes towards high temperature regime. But this also includes finite degradation of the sample. So it seems that our electron gas is very fragile, unfortunately, at this high mobility regime. So we still need this, need some time to really resolve our electronic structures. Okay, so using the remaining time, I'll move on to the next topic, which is about the topological crystalline insulator candidate. And this, I have to warn you that this is a very preliminary part of the project. So compared to the previous talk, it's really crude. But nevertheless, let me show you some of the recent results. So this weird composition is coming from the weird, not weird in the structure, but the weird coordination of the elements. So oxygen is sitting at the center of the octahedra, and which is surrounded by strontium atoms. So otherwise, actually, this structure has perfectly resembling this normal perovskite structure, like STO. And I have to mention that one unfortunate attribute is that it's very reactive to air. So we have to be very careful about dealing with this material. OK, so electronic structure is pretty much different compared to conventional oxides. So the states near Fermi energy is mainly composed of strontium 40 and lead 6p. And what's interesting is that there's a band inversion between these two states. And after the band inversion, there's a strong hybridization happening, which opens up a gap, except for one location where which is related to the specific crystal axis. So actually, this leads to quite interesting features in this material. One is that at along the gamma x direction, there appears a Dirac cone from which the electron dispersion is linear in all of the three directions. So this is a candidate of a three-dimensional Dirac system. But actually, by first principle calculation, there is a tiny gap. And this actually brings the system a candidate of a topological insulator. But actually, it is trivial. So the reason is quite special, unique in this system. So actually, around the gamma point where the band inversion is happening, there's an additional twofold degeneracy coming from the orbitals, which is actually canceling this topological number to become zero. However, actually, a team recently found that this is not a topological insulator, but actually a topological crystalline insulator. And he's kind of showed a topological argument behind this tight binding model where the some surface state is found. So these are kind of basic properties of this system. And actually, our experimental colleague in Stuttgart, managed to measure the single crystal samples of these things. And basically, what they found is that this is indeed a very low keratinity system. And effective mass is very small, 0.02, which is kind of consistent with the idea that this has a Dirac linear-like dispersion. So we are interested in having the thin film version of this material. The reason is following. So this material has a high symmetry, so it unfortunately doesn't cleave. So if we are to measure the surface property, surface states, it's quite tricky for a single crystal to apply all of those surface-sensitive techniques. So that's one motivation. And of course, there's quite a large freedom of tuning the system. If we adapt thin film, for example, strain or quantum confinement. And of course, also in the future, we can interface this material with other material to make a super lattice. And these are the basic motivation behind this thin film business. OK, so I'll talk a little bit about the experimental part. So we brought this oxide MBE system from Japan. And we basically used this system to measure, grow the strontium 3 PbO film. So we just supply elements by elements independently using this kind of system. So, but in the beginning, what we found is that we get actually nothing in the XRT spectra. Although we are for sure that by naked eye, something is sticking onto the substrate. So the reason was actually that the reaction of this guy with air is much more severe than we expected. So here's a cross-sectional view of this thing. And on top of this very nice atomically resolved LAL substrate, there's something on top, which was actually amorphous, decomposed version of this film. So actually, this for taking this thing, we exposed to air only probably about 1 minute or so. But since this cross-sectional thing is very thin, around 100 nanometers, it was already enough to decompose everything. So this was bad, but we recently found a solution, which is just to make a thicker film and quickly transfer it to the some other system to cap with a protecting layer. And this actually worked so far. And what we realized is that actually it's not too difficult to grow this film. We obtained this film in a quite large growth window. So what we had to care is just after the growth of the film, we have to be very careful to remove the reaction with air. So to be honest, we only had three films so far. And here is the result. So basically, we have a metallic dependence of the temperature. And by measuring the Hall effect, what we found is that our system is quite highly doped, quite away from the Dirac point where we would like to be. It's roughly something like 0.5 electron volt. And this actually explains the very small magnetic resistance we get up to now, because you know having the high keratinity is normally coming from having a dopants, which will introduce the disorder into the system and make the mobility quite low. But actually, a good part of this thing is that the structure itself is not destroyed, even after doping this much keratinity. So this sort of, I think, inherits the normal property we expect in oxides, where you can dope a bunch of carriers without destroying the structure itself. OK, so I would like to talk about a little bit on the ongoing modification in this project. So we know that we have to do everything under vacuum. So we kind of modified our MB system to allow vacuum transferring of the samples to basically all of the relevant system using what we call the vacuum suitcase. And in the near future, SDM is joining this family. And we also want to mention a little bit about our effort toward the heterostructuring. So to have a reasonable interface between other materials, we first of all have to make sure that the growth is more or less in a two-dimensional mode, which we recently found. And so as a candidate of interface material, we grow strontium oxide, which is actually a very good insulator, having a band gap of 5.3 eV, and with a very surprisingly close matching of the lattice constant. So, for example, what you get in the XRD is that you cannot resolve the difference between these two, and only difference is appearing here, which is a 0.01 reflectance, which is disappearing in SRO because of this extinction rule of the rock salt structure. So this is how we kind of differentiate these two. So finally, I would like to propose what we are kind of thinking of utilizing this kind of interface. So one obvious way is to just make a super lattice of this sort, sandwiching this topological crystalline insulator candidate with SRO. And this, I think, mimics this paper by Berkhoff and Leon Balance, proposed recently. And actually, this figure shows that there's a wild symmetrical phase as you tune the parameters, which is related to the connection between the surface states within the film and between the neighboring film. So this, of course, we can tune quite easily by just tuning the thickness of those films. But what we are lacking is magnetic moment to this film. So this is still a tricky business, but what we can think of is actually making this kind of structure, utilizing this unique structure of this strontium 3 PPO, where when we go layer by layer, this is actually the alternate of plus 2 charge and minus 2 charge. So this is kind of a polar catastrophe picture. But by using this, we can actually control the breaking of inversion symmetry, at least. So this is one of the, I think, interesting possibility. And probably it's still a bit far ahead to really realize this one. But we are trying to make some progress also toward this heterostructuring in the near future. OK, so this was the final slide. And to conclude my talk, in the first part of my talk, I described about the unique spin texture arising in otherwise quite conventional materials, strontium titanate, by utilizing this specific interference measurement of the electron gas. So message here is that you can actually sometimes use the transport technique to resolve this spin texture in the momentum space. And the second talk was about the topological crystalline insulator candidate strontium 3 PPO. And the message here is that we now have a film. So we have to move on to resolve some of the interesting phenomena predicted in this family of materials. So thank you very much for your attention.
It's great. Yeah, very interesting. So I'm wondering about this this transfer titanate. So you're saying that the lower states, they dispersion there, dx, y, and they basically separate, right?
Yeah.
And it looks like by the dispersion, the mobility will be very, very different, and plus the orbital character is very different, right? So does it somehow enter your calculation of localization?
OK, so this was actually the extreme limit. where the splitting is around 0.1 electron volts, say. But actually, the spin orbit coupling strength is something like 20 millielectron volts. So if the splitting is lower than that value, actually it's better to describe the basis function by using the spin orbit coupled basis rather than this YZ, ZX, and XY. So I'm not sure if I'm answering your question correctly, but basically that's the reason why we use this spin orbit coupled basis.
Yeah.
Because our film energy is something like 5 millielectron volt.
Why do you think that?
But I assume that you have YZ and ZX degenerate. Spin orbit will not complete this 0.5 or 0.2 eV.
Yeah.
It will split and give you this plus minus
one eV. Look at it in course.
You mean which extreme are you talking about?
If, even if I am on that extreme case,
yes.
Then this double
degree. Okay. That's true. Yeah, that I haven't thought carefully. Yeah, that's true. I was wondering if you remove these orbitals out of the six-digit manifold, is it still proper to kind of think about? But it might be, yes. So it still might be kind of isotropic, circular.
Yes. Plus. Minus 3.5.
Yeah.
It's only made by YZ and ZX.
Yeah, exactly. So that actually might explain why these states might be kind of robust.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More questions? Seems not the case, and let's hear again. I have a short announcement. Next Wednesday, there will be a KITP barbecue, and it will include a very important event, which is a soccer game between. There are three programs running in parallel: biology, Lattice QCD, and our program. So there will be two teams made out of three programs, and. You know, historically, it's a very important event, and I encourage anybody who has a little experience with soccer to join and announce, please, your willingness to Lucille by email or just knocking to her door. And we'll have some more participants coming from Germany. Let's do this. Build a good team. That's all for today.